often. Okay. You can tell there should be little lights flashing there.
But it's going around. That's what it's doing. Yeah. And we are testing, so we'll see if it's worked.
Well, you're not running off, are you?
I can't help you with this.
Okay.
I'm going to go and...
My first question, Elmer, is would you give your complete name, your age, and where you were born?
Okay.
For now.
Well, my name is Elmer Lewis Perry, and I was, the Lewis part was after my grandfather, Lewis Perry. And in June the 19th, 1919, in Imbleory, and under an apple tree, I was born. And I was born at home. And would you like my parents?
Well, of course.
My mother's name was Jessie Henry. And she was a pioneer to the Grand Valley, and my father was Charles Franklin Perry, and he also come at the turn of the 19th century to the county, and they...
Were you literally born under the apple tree?
Literally. They went out in an apple orchard and cut down two trees and built a house there, and that's where we were born and raised.
Well, for gosh sakes. And in a house?
In the house.
Okay.
not outside.
Okay, I had to get that straight. Okay, now, did your family remain in that same location between your birth and your 12th birthday?
Oh, yeah. They lived there, and all that time when I was growing up, it was during the Depression, those dear old days. And it was interesting. We was poor as church mice, and we didn't have any, very little money, but we always had plenty to eat.
You know, in those days, it seemed like you either had a cow or gardens.
Well, we had cows, we had pigs, we had chickens and rabbits, a big garden, and we bottled and canned our fruit and butchered our own meat, and we had to take ham sandwiches a lot of the time to school for lunch.
You really suffered, didn't you? Probably homemade bread. Tastes gooder than good.
Definitely homemade bread.
Oh. Now, did you have brothers and sisters?
I did. I had two older sisters and one older brother, and then I had twin sisters after I was 12 years old.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I had twin sisters, and they're still the only ones that are still alive today.
Oh, that was wonderful. Are they around?
One of them lives near Salt Lake City, and the other lives down in Eugene, Oregon.
Oh, my. What are some of your earliest recollections as a child? These are some of them, I see.
Well, we lived out in Imbler. It was among, the whole area was solid apple trees. And that's the way people made their living back there. And they planted these apple trees when they first come to the valley in 1900. And so for many years, apples was the mainstay of Imbler.
What kind of apples?
They had a lot of the different kinds that they had, and they shipped them out. And it was a full year. It took all year to raise apples. In the winter, they spent all winter pruning the trees, and spring come, why, they had to start spraying. And then when the apples got about as big as a big cherry, they started to thin the apples. And then they sprayed and cultivated them all summer, and then in the fall, while they build boxes, wood boxes, bushel boxes, to put them in when we picked them. And then they picked them and hauled them to their warehouses. And then they spent all the rest of the winter running them over graders and sorting and wrap and packing those. Every apple they'd wrap in a piece of paper and very methodically lay them in a box.
What
and then
work.
They ship them all over the United States.
I bet you can smell apples to this day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But apples were one of the big mainstays for many, many years while we were growing up.
Did you make cider?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
They had apples that made, some apples made a lot better cider than others, and that's when we'd celebrate Halloween and parties and donuts, we always had cider.
Oh, that's wonderful. Was there any experiences that you wish to recall about school, your favorite subject or something?
Well, you know, the kids moan and groan today about going to school and they hate it and everything, but I never experienced anything like that. We had fun when we went to school. I wasn't very smart, but we had a lot of fun going to school. And I specialized in shop and in FFA work. We had a strong program with FFA. And I had an excellent teacher, Joe Jarvis, who is still alive to this day, was one of my first teachers. But we did have fun going to school. We had lots of plays, one-act plays. We had three-act plays, and we had what do they sing? What do they call them?
Yeah.
But anyway, those kind of programs. And we had our athletics, our baseball, basketball, and all those things. And you know what was interesting? It was only day before yesterday that we had our every 2 years we have our class reunion. From all the graduates from 1920 to 1945.
Right?
And we had it out at our old schoolhouse, and it was wonderful. You never saw so much hugging and talking in your life. They're just one big family.
Oh, I'm sure.
They come from all over different states every 2 years.
How many of you are there still?
There must have been way over 100 that attended that.
Oh, how wonderful.
We have a big dinner, and it's just wonderful. And that school spirit is still maintained out there after these years. And it happened to be my 64th anniversary of my graduation.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, let's see. One of the questions he has here is on medicine and health care. How have you and your family needed medical service in Union County? And how well have they served your needs?
Well, we had a family doctor, and when he came to visit you out there, well, he'd come on the train or the best way he could get there.
So he'd come to the home?
Yeah. I nearly died with pneumonia when I was a baby, and then they'd come when they could get there and deliver babies. But my mother was a midwife, and she delivered probably more babies than the doctors did.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it a bit.
Yeah. In the middle of the night, they'd knock on the back door, and I've seen her get up and go in the middle of the night many times.
Oh, I think that's wonderful. Well, he says, how has the nature and quality of medical care changed during the years that you've lived in this county?
Well, I went from near zero to everything because if it hadn't have been for the modern technology just within the last 6 months when I had my major heart attack, I'm sure I wouldn't be here today.
Isn't that wonderful?
Oh, it was, and that was the second time.
Second one?
Yeah. I had one 2 years ago.
Oh, I didn't realize that, Elmer.
But it is really... My life has been preserved so many times through the great care that I've had. And so, literally, they went to where I had pneumonia and couldn't do a thing for me to where they do most everything for you now.
I think it's absolutely wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
I really do. And, of course, one of the main questions that is of importance to you is religion. In what way do the churches or any single church that you know best serve the people of Union County? What religion are you?
Well, we belong to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And what is interesting, that when my ancestors on both sides moved into the Embley area, there was a big extended family, and they created the whole nucleus for the church in Embley. And they were just one big family, and for Thanksgiving and for Christmas, we always celebrated together at the church. And many of the citizens of the area, other than our members, would come and have Thanksgiving dinner and that sort of thing with us and come to Christmas program. Now, do you want an interesting little side, I'd like to show you how much many of the people that didn't belong to our church, the misconceptions they had about the Mormon church, as it is nicknamed. My mother tells the story about how some of the men in the community would catch the little Mormon kids and look in their hair for horns. And they actually believed that Mormons had horns.
Oh, for gosh sakes.
If you can
imagine that.
And that isn't completely eradicated today, because it pops up once in a while. But it just goes to show you how much misconception that there can be. But the LDS Church, as it is called too, was very strong out there in the Embley community, and it is in the valley. We have probably 10% at least of the entire valley that are members of the church.
Of course.
So it has a very strong influence then, and even more so now.
I know. Deanne gave me an article that came over the internet about this man that had heard so many bad things about the Mormon church, but he said he'd love to have his children marry one any day. He went to the churches, and he talked how we studied the Bible and everything else. And anyway, it was a very wonderful article that was put in California newspaper. Mm-hmm. And so,
well, even to this day, we have so many of our LDS people that are very prominent in the school system, in the judicial system, the police system, in the business world. Some of the outstanding businesses and some most successful are owned by members of our church.
Yes.
And they are respected.
Oh, yes,
over.
And trusted.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so. Okay, now, have you been involved in a scouting program?
Yes, I was a scout when the program was, as I remember, was less than 10 years old. I was a scout. I never got very far in the program, because we, in that little ward out of Denver, we didn't have a strong scouting program. But I was a scout.
Uh-huh.
And we've, all through the years, our two boys were involved in scouting and been a part of many Eagle projects, helping the boys get their Eagle Scout projects and all those things.
Oh, I figured you had been involved over the years, very much so. Okay. Now, Elmer, you have been in construction, haven't you?
Yes, I was a contractor for 30 years. Built over 100 big homes and about that many more big remodel jobs up and down Adams Avenue. I worked on a goodly share of all the businesses up and down Adams, built churches, commercial buildings, and all those kind of things.
Had a wonderful reputation.
Well, I hope so. They're still all my friends anyway.
Well, that's very important. What was it like to do work in Union County for you?
Much better than it is now.
Oh, I'll bet.
We had a there were some inspections and things that was back there, but we always overbuilt and did things the best you could do it, and we never had any problems with the so-called inspectors. They knew that we was going to do it right.
Yeah.
And it was a pleasure to build things back then, and I'm glad I'm not doing it now.
Oh, I bet you are. I bet you are. There's just so many, many rules and regulations, and the loss of freedom of being able to build where you want, too, is another thing that's so hard. You've enjoyed that work, I know.
Oh, I'd be doing it right today. What's interesting, one of my grandsons is building a beautiful big home out in Ion City, and we check on it virtually every day. And it's just fun to check. And right above our hill right here, they're building the new science building. I can sit right in my big chair and watch them build it.
Oh my, that's
and
huge.
And that is a $33 million project, and I go up every day and check on it.
Okay, what advice would you give a young person that was going to enter in the building trades in this country now?
Well, I think they should check into it and at least work a year or two just on the job with somebody that knows what they're doing, and to get a feel to see if they're willing to do it, because it's hard work.
Yes.
But now they have so many things that it spoils a carpenter. So many big nail guns and saws and all the ready-made this, ready-made that. All you got to do is put it together like a bunch of dominoes.
I know. I know it.
And your cabinets, they're all built for you. Just set them in and put a few screws in. It's a lot different than when we used to make everything, even our door frames, our windows, and all those things, we made them from scratch.
And the loss, there's not the pride in the good workmanship that there used to be, is there?
Not in most cases.
I know it. How was the cemetery that you are most familiar with organized and financed and maintained over the many years?
Well, the one where I grew up was out at the Somerville Cemetery, and it's one of the most beautiful, I think, in our whole valley. And that's where a lot of our family is buried. But as long as I can remember when I was young, they had an annual dinner, a potluck dinner at Somerville. And they you'd bring the dinner, then you'd buy it back, like contributions at the dinner, pay so much. And that's the way that they supported the cemetery for many, many years until they begin to put it on the tax rolls.
Uh-huh.
And it was through those dinners that they...
I didn't realize that.
That they took care of the cemetery. And they did a good job of it, and it was fun.
What's the name of the man out there that's been there so many years?
Oliver, Emery Oliver.
Yeah, the meanest man in Somerville.
Yeah, he can walk to any grave in that place out there.
I know it. He knows who's buried where. And
people like him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, of course, you know, Elton and Mother and all them are buried there.
That's right.
So I think it's a beautiful cemetery. How have funeral and burial customs changed?
Well, I don't know that there's been a whole lot of change in it, unless it's that the cost of it has escalated so much that it's almost unreal.
Yes.
But they still have to embalm them. They still have to put them in a casket of one kind or another. And you still have to dig a 6-foot hole for them. But you do now, they used to let them put the casket in a wooden box, but now it's got to either be concrete or steel when it goes in the ground.
You know, when we were in Europe, we didn't realize that they buried people way down and stacked them on top of one another because they just don't have enough room.
Yeah.
And so...
Well, I don't think they have done stop for that yet, but they do bury tiny babies on top of another grave sometime.
Yes, that'd be wonderful, really.
Did you push all the walls?
Yeah. Yeah. If you have been a careful observer of Artitech in any part of Union County, which buildings strike you as being the most interesting?
Well, I've watched, it has been my privilege in my lifetime to watch every building on the Eastern Oregon University built, every building, from the first one that was started in 1928.
Is that right?
And I've watched them all be built. And now as I watch this one on for the big science building, the addition, it's been really interesting. That's probably one of the biggest buildings. But, of course, I have used blueprints all through these years that I build houses and other buildings. And I even, some of the biggest homes that I ever built, I designed and worked with the people and build them to their satisfaction, the way they wanted them, and draw the plans. And so I've enjoyed that part of my business, building a whole bunch.
You also designed something for the church, didn't you?
I am an inventor.
Uh-huh.
I've invented quite a few things, from hunting equipment and all those things, winches and sleds and all those things. But I did develop what is known as a sacrament tray filler for the little glasses for the sacrament that filled 36 glasses. That's what there is on the tray. And it'd fill 18 of them at once, and they would automatically stop when they was exactly right, and things that has been... And there's thousands of them used throughout the church.
Yeah, that was really something for you to design something that the church uses all over.
Yeah.
It
isn't all over the church, but there were 3,000 of them that I built.
Oh, that's something, Elmer.
And produced and manufactured and produced.
Okay. You've been a hunter.
Yeah, I didn't get started until I was about 12.
Oh my!
Hunting birds and rabbits out in the orchards, but then I did start legally at when it was time to go deer hunting and elk.
You think attitudes have changed about hunting, or remained about the same over the past century?
Oh, it's changed completely.
Yes.
The original purpose of hunting was to get food for the winter, and now it's completely different. It's just a sport. Too many go trophy hunting only, and there's so much poaching and stuff.
And the meat means nothing to them.
No.
I know when we first got married, that deer or elk was pretty important, and we used to joke about doe meat and beans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, out at a reunion, I heard some of the old timers talking about how they lived. That was the only meat that they ever grew up on, was wild meat, and a lot of it was illegally killed out of season.
Oh, yeah.
But it was a survival thing during the Depression.
And I think it was healthy meat.
Yeah, it was.
Too, not as much fat, and it's wonderful. What accounts have you heard about Indians being in the Grand Round Valley?
Well, you know, I've had some first-hand experience at that. I've been really interested that the Indians, this Grand Round Valley for many, many years was a rendezvous for all the tribes around Washington, Idaho, Oregon. They would come to the Grand Round Valley every spring and summer, and they would spend the entire summer here hunting, fishing, getting their meat and fish and drying it. They picked huckleberries, and I remember when I was young, right up above Mount Glen, I've seen the Indians personally, the squaws and their kids. They come in with their horses and their things. They drag they come over from someplace in Umatilla or somewhere. They come and camp through the whole huckleberry season, picking huckleberries as long as there was any and dry them, take them back. And I've seen that with my own eyes.
Oh, that's marvelous.
I've seen them come up Catherine Creek and catch the salmon right on the creek and spear them and all and catch them.
Ah, that's...
And another interesting thing that I had personal contact with, in the fall, these Indian squaws would come by our places out at Imbler and to see if we had any deer and elk hides, and we got to where we saved them. And they would take, if you had two deer skins, why, they would take them, tan them, and bring them back and give you the choice of which one you wanted.
Oh my, how generous.
Oh yeah, and they did a beautiful job of tanning those hides.
I remember there for a while, if you gave the hides to somebody, was it the elks or somebody, they'd give you a pair of gloves?
I've never heard about the gloves, but they've always taken the hide.
Oh, yes, definitely. Well, I think that's wonderful that you got to see all that with the Indians.
Yeah.
You said that you had something else of interest?
Well, you know, when we were kids living out in Imbler, in that little rural place, that we, as little kids, we really kind of had a fear of what was known as gypsies, that they would come by and when our folks is gone, that they would kidnap us and take us. And gypsies was not just a myth. They was actually a group of people who roamed around and lived. They begged for food or anything that people would give them. And
did they steal, like the reputation that they had?
I never witnessed any of it, but they say that they did. But if they did, I would imagine that it would be food or something of that kind. But they were real in my young life.
Uh-huh. Oh.
And another interesting thing, too. Back in those days, we didn't have a grocery store at the corner of the... And all these things that you needed on everyday life, like salves and all these different things. And we had products that's called the Raleigh product, traveling salespeople, and a Watkins product. And ever so often, these men of these big suitcases would come to our home and take an order for spices or whatever that they had, thread or whatever that they...
Liniment or...
Liniment and all those things. And then...
Vanilla too, didn't they have?
Yeah. And then they would take the order, and most of the time they had it with them. They stocked the common things. The great big heavy suitcases, and they'd lay them out right on your floor, and there it was right before you, and you didn't even have to go to a store. And that went on for many years until a very limited degree now. There's still some of that.
Was that when cars? Were they in cars?
Oh, yeah. They were in cars.
Uh-huh.
When I, as old as the cars were, they still had them.
Uh-huh.
And that's another thing that I've witnessed is go clear from the Model T to the cars that we have today. And I owned myself one or two old Model T's, one of the oldest. First Model T coupe that they had glass windows in. I bought one of those.
Oh, is that right?
When I was a teenager.
I remember my mother talking about her driving a Model T out in the field to get home, and it was dark, and she ran over a cow, and it didn't tip over.
And she was lucky.
Yes.
Yeah, she was lucky.
Maybe it was a young cow, I don't know, but I remember that. Her telling how it...
When I was just a little boy, my grandmother gave me an ox yoke that my grandfather made, and they hauled logs and timber out of Indian Creek with a big set of oxen. And after he died, she gave me that ox yoke, and I made the stays, the yoke, the bows, that's what they were called, because they didn't have one, but I made those myself from Hawthorne and bent those big things in a U shape that's put around the ox's neck, the bull's. But I made the, but I still have this ox yoke, and I it'll stay in our family forever because I made a promise to a man that bought my parents' place, and the ox yoke was left when he bought it there. And when I went back...
How old is it?
Oh, it's over 100 years old.
Uh-huh.
But I made a promise to him that if he would let me have it back, that I would never sell it. And I had a guy, a millionaire, offer to buy it the other day, and I said, you haven't got enough money to buy it.
I don't blame you.
But anyway, I still have it, and we plan to pass it on down. Maybe someday it'll be put in a museum or something.
But I think that's wonderful.
Still have it. And then I had some other interesting experiences when I was growing up. There was a concept among the people then, they built high ceilings for their houses, 12 foot tall, the ceilings in the houses, so they get lots of fresh air. And then they needed, and my dad, I think he was fanatic on it, but in our bedroom there was a door going to the outside, and that door stood open winter and summer to get fresh air. And our fire would go out in our wood stove, and you open that door and the snow would drift in, and it was so cold that even in our kitchen, our water bucket, a 2-gallon bucket would freeze solid. I've seen it untold times, our bucket of water in the kitchen.
Winter time even.
Oh. Well, I really don't understand just why my dad was so narrow-minded about that, if you want to put it that way. But that door, it got so cold in our bedrooms and things that we just had to have a lot of covers. We when we go to bed at night, we'd have hot rocks that we would wrap up and put down the bottom of the bed.
Oh.
And I tell you, you was glad to have a brother to sleep with.
I bet.
And
you
I appreciated my brother so much to be able to cuddle up to him when I was little. And your fires would go out. We never had good stoves that would hold a fire only for maybe an hour. The room would be warm.
Oh,
the front
really?
Room.
An hour?
And you get up in the morning, it was the same temperature outside as it was inside.
Oh, my.
And we'd set the kindling. We'd make kindling and put in our cook stove. And then all we had to get up and toss a match at it. And then we'd crawl back in bed and let it begin to get warm up. But we never had any outside or inside plumbing at all. We carried every drop of water, we pumped it outside, brought it in, heated it on the stove, and that was for washing. It was an all-day project to wash clothes.
Oh, I bet.
And you would put them in these washers, and you'd work them by hand, washers, to for clean the clothes. You'd wring them out, hand-wring them.
And did you bathe in those tubs?
And, oh, yeah. We had a round metal tub. We put water in it, and depending on your seniority, who had a bath first. And somebody'd take a bath, and then you'd pour in a little hot water from the tea kettle, and somebody'd take a bath in the same water and on down.
Oh, yeah. And, I tell you, that was very necessary.
Yeah. But these outside restrooms, there was really something in the winter. You'd wade through those drifts of snow and go out there and push the door open and scrape off 6 or 8 inches of snow off of the toilet seat.
Oh, my gosh.
And you know, for what it's worth, department, I never saw a roll of toilet paper till after I was 19 years old.
Did you use the catalog?
The catalog. You know, there's the joke, and you probably have been told so many times, that somebody wrote into Sears and Roebuck's and asked them to order some toilet paper. And they says, well, why don't you use the we need a catalog number. And she says, well, if we'd had a catalog, we wouldn't have needed the...
Oh, I know, I can remember that. They used
all the washing. I remember my mother washing and hanging the clothes out in those cold, cold days, and it would freeze dry. Literally, those wet clothes would freeze dry, and then you had to take them in the house that evening and hang them up on lines above the cook stove and let them air out.
Oh, my.
And they did all their own sewing and made lots of quilts and all those kinds of
and
things.
When you were really young, did they have curlids?
Most of them.
Did they
and I think they were curlids that had the little rubber underneath them. And then they had glass lids.
That clamped.
Just clamped down.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
And they didn't have pressure cookers per se, but they had really neat steam cookers where you could put maybe 14 quarts in and close the little doors, and it would cook by steam, and steam is pretty hot.
Uh-huh.
That's how they were able to preserve our food. We usually had from 700 to 800 quarts of fruit and vegetables in our cellar that we bottled every year.
Yeah, you'd have to have that many for a whole family.
And we would used to can lots of peas, and we'd pick peas by 2 tubs full in a day, set all day potting them. And that's when my first invention that I come along with, I figured there had to be a better way than to spend all day potting peas. And I developed the way of taking a washing machine wringer and run them through the wringer, and I could just put them in with both hands, and I could pod more than the whole crew could.
I did that with my sister in out there at Union, and boy, till you catch on to it, peas were falling everywhere.
Well, you put up a kind of a spurt around
each side
of it, and you catch most of them.
They were going everywhere.
So that's the first invention that I had, was to use the washing machine.
Anything that you can do like that to save time for the whole family is absolutely wonderful.
Well, it was great.
Well, let me stop again. Okay, have you talked with your children and others in the county about the quality of public education? What stands out as most important changes in the way students learn in the county schools now?
Oh, I think back when I was in the first and second grade, they taught us to read with phonics, the sound, to learn sounds and to sound out words. And that has been a help to me to this day after 83 years. I still sound out words, and they taught me that in the first grade. And they changed their concepts back and forth, and I had one child that got caught in the middle of that change from sound and sight reading and messed him up all forever for spelling and things like that. But I think the greatest change that I've seen since my lifetime is the attitude that the kids have, that they're doing somebody a favor if they go to school. They don't realize they haven't had enough experience in life to know that it's them that they're damaging, and they think it's nobody's business. I'm the only one that it's hurting, but it isn't. But it's hurting their whole, all their descendants. They'll come after them. But it's the attitude that the kids have that about going to school and learning. I haven't seen an awful lot of that among my own 37 grandchildren, because they've done all pretty good and they've all graduated from high school and things like that. But the kids, they get messed up with their different attitudes, their drugs, their smoking and everything. And I'm not saying that the kids didn't smoke and drink back in our day, because they did. And they're all dead now as a result of it.
Yes, definitely.
But I think it's the attitude that so many of the kids have, that they really think they're doing somebody a favor if they go to school.
And a lack of respect.
And they don't respect. Boy, I tell you, when we sat in the desk, we didn't open our mouths until our hand went up.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't leave to go to the restroom until you had permission. You don't just walk out of a class like they do now.
Oh, I know. And I think it's pathetic the way the learning, like you say, they think they're doing a favor.
Mm-hmm.
And it is sad.
You know, there's another interesting thing that we had when I went to school. For about the first 4 or 5 grades, in every classroom we had what was a big sandbox. It must have been 6 feet one way and 8 another, about 6 inches deep, and they filled it with sand. It was on legs up as high as the table. And that was one of the greatest teaching instruments that we had in school, was that sandbox. If we studied about a country like Denmark or Holland, you know, we would make the lakes in the sand with blue paper under a piece of glass, and then we'd make the windmills and the dikes and all those things out of sand. We had these projects. And it was the most fun, and it really taught.
It made it very interesting.
Yeah. And I don't know to this day why they don't have them today, but it was one of the greatest learning instruments that we had.
Sounds like it was. I've never seen it.
But anyway, it was fun, and we had fun.
So you enjoyed learning history and geography and what have you because of it.
That's right.
Yeah.
I don't know why they don't do it today, but...
Well, they don't do a lot of things today. You had some remarks about toys and things that you
see. Well, see, the thing that is, our families were so poor. If we got one little simple item for Christmas, we were fortunate. And so we learned to build our own toys. And all through my young life, well, we built swings. We built equipment to haul hay on our little wagons. And I learned to build blocks out of wood to build things. And I carried that clear down to this day of building blocks that you could put together, build towers or walls or houses or whatever with them. And our little great-grandchildren play with them even now. But we live in a disposable world, and if it don't have a battery, the kids aren't interested in it.
That's true.
One of the favorite things that we had as toys, my friends and I, were what we call bottle horses.
Uh-huh.
We would take two beer bottles with the little necks, and we would make harnesses for them, and single trees and double trees, and then we'd pull little wagons and little bobsleds and all those things. Well, I've always told my children about it, and my grandchildren, and they played with them, and they told their school teachers about it. And for many years, they asked me to come up and give me a whole period of time in their classes, and I demonstrated at the schools.
Oh, really?
My toys that I made, my bottle horses, and my little wagons that we would pull with them, and all the other kind of little toys that I made that we played with when I was a kid. And the little kids were just fascinated. They would pull these all over the classroom, and I created quite a reputation at the schools.
Oh, I'll bet you did.
Where I demonstrated.
Wished I could have seen one of those demonstrations.
I still have a set of horses, a four-horse team.
Is that right?
Of those bottle horses that I took up to the schools and showed them.
You've got to show me before I leave.
But it was really, really an interesting thing. And we had more fun. We would build barns. We would build corrals for these horses and mangers. And we would feed them and take care of them. And that's some of the only toys we had.
Oh, and it used your imagination all the time.
Yeah.
I think
we would grade roads with them, and we'd work them hard, make them earn their keep.
I remember when I was little, in the summertime, I would pick the hollyhocks and make dolls out of them, and that hollyhock was the skirt.
Yeah.
And I can't remember now what I used for a head, but I played with those a lot.
But it's so sad today. The kids, you give them an expensive gift, and they'll use it about 5 minutes and look for something else, and that's it.
One of the good things that they had invented, in my opinion, was the Legos.
Yeah.
Because
they could use their imagination.
Yes, that required some thinking, and they would play with them for hours.
I invented another thing, is making wood triangles that... you can put together, make hundreds of designs with them. I have a set of those.
Oh, my.
I'll show you them for
you. Okay. Well, Elmer, I think this interview has been extremely interesting, and I'm sure it will make very interesting history. Thank you.